background noise. So I feel it myself.
Have you made a recommendation on the judgeship that's vacant in this district yet?
I will. I have not made it yet.
Do you know about when you'll be making it?
I should be making it shortly. My committee has slowed me up because it's summer and hello.
Better, how are you?
Okay.
I'm Haskins. I go to the toilet.
You're our host, yeah.
Yes.
Thank you. Pleasure to see you. I think the only one you don't know is Jennifer McBee. Where is she?
Jennifer.
Oh, she's there. No.
Huh?
If God, if not, I'll take milk.
Is Harry going to be here?
It really isn't necessary.
His secretary told him.
It really isn't necessary at all.
What do you do as a general delegate at the UN conference?
The UN conference comes after this. Begins September 15th. The General Assembly meeting, their annual meeting. This is a special conference. I tried to recruit on North-South issues.
In terms of the haves and the have-nots?
In terms of the haves and the have-nots, in terms of what's called the common fund, which we want, with certain limitations to stimulate the production of raw materials, and which they'd like is to get the money and to get the raw materials. And I've been in that hassle now for 5 years.
So what's your role in this conference? You said you're a general delegate?
Yes, I'm a general delegate from the Senate. There's, one senator on each side, majority and minority. And there are other delegates in the United States. Generally, it's the UN ambassador. And it's an ongoing thing with something called UNCTAD, which is the so-called group of 77, which is now well over 100 developing countries.
Gary, do you have your mic going? Very well.
Anyhow, I'd like to play that down right now because everybody has an idea that I'm so busy with foreign policy, but that isn't true. And that gets the publicity and glamour, but it just isn't true as far as I'm concerned.
On that point, your opponents, both in the Republican primary and the Democratic contenders, have alleged that you have not done enough for New York, you have not devoted enough time and energy to the problems of New York's economy, New York government fiscal problems.
That is untrue. I have, for example, helped to save a big enterprise here called Altec. And maybe a lot more. This work in Albany on the Tenite, which is financed with federal funds, has been a big job that we have done. You've got a $5 million UDAG grant for housing here in 5 separate locations, which we have done. So there's plenty here that we have been. We've done it everywhere in the state. Of course, what do you expect my opponents to say? I'm great. I have time for everything. I'm the finest senator New York ever has. They're gonna, get on to something. That's flatly untrue. I've helped to save a great many enterprises. I've helped to put labor markets like Jamestown and Elmira and Buffalo in much better shape than they've ever been by the organization of labor management committees, which are very successful. I've gotten, into the position to get defense business for Grumman and Fairchild and Western New York subcontractors. We've done an enormous amount of work in getting grants for arts and humanities projects in the state, for education projects. You know, we can give you a long list of those. Matter of fact, do you have my bag with you?
Paul has it.
Paul, if you can get him down to bring my bag up. Unfortunately, that list is there. But that's true in every county I go into. I have, you know, a long list of projects we've been working on. My office, you know, has a reputation for being one of the best on Capitol Hill. It didn't get it because I'm busy in foreign affairs. And I lend myself to it, very active. And to talk about the big ones, Bill Proxmire has just written a book. He's chairman of the Banking Committee. And he says that he gives myself in 75 and Moynihan and myself in 78 the full credit for turning the Senate around. So it was four loans to New York City and guaranteed. Says we did it.
Senator, one of the points raised by your opponents, D'Amato in particular, is the fact that your record indicates that you're more of a Democrat than a Republican, that your voting record in the Congress, in the Senate, supports Carter's views and Carter's policies, Carter's programs, more often than opposes them. And yet, you as a Republican, you are running as a Republican in opposition to the Democratic Party. What is your response?
My response to that is that I vote according to the best interests of my state. And I do not vote against Carter because he's a Democrat. That would be highly prejudicial to my state. I call them as I see them. Now, as to the details, let us remember that I'm the ranking member of the Foreign Relations Committee. And nothing gets out of that committee that I don't agree with. And half of these votes are these very same votes. I know all, you know, it's counted. Half of these very same votes are to confirm ambassadors and to ratify treaties and other governmental agreements. And I'm thoroughly devoted to the bipartisan foreign policy of the country. And as I said before, I voted for the Panama Canal Treaty. I'm all for it. And I'm for Salt II, not against one of its principal protagonists, and so on. And half of those votes, by count, are attributable to that position. As to the other half, that's about the average of all the Republican senators. They support the president about 40-odd percent of the time, because that's the way our government runs. That's why we have a two-party system. You don't vote against the president because he's a Democrat. If you do, if that's what Mr. D'Amato is going to do, then he's certainly disqualified for the Senate of the United States. And that's my position about this fellow. That is that if he should go to the Senate, I doubt that he can win an election here, even if he should defeat me in the primary. But if he should, he will be one of a band of 10 or 12 senators, ultra-conservative, for prayer in the schools and for a constitutional amendment against abortion and against the ERA and for the 55-mile speed limit and so on ad infinitum. You can mark him, tab him right away, and against housing and against help to education. And that's not me. And the people of New York have elected and re-elected me on four occasions with my record. I certainly haven't cheated them. They knew just what they would get, and they wanted it. And the members of my party have renominated and renominated me four times.
Senator, you're...
So, you know, it's awfully easy to pick on me. I've cast 10,000 votes on the record, roughly 500 to 600 a year. And believe me, if my average is 75%, it's great. And there are a lot of votes I'd like to pull back, too. But that's what life's all about in this business.
Your positions are, your opponent's positions are more directly in line with the man who heads the ticket this year, Ronald Reagan. And yours, more often than not, are not in line with that. I'm wondering how you feel about running on a ticket that's headed by Ronald Reagan, whether he has your full endorsement. Does he?
He has my full endorsement. I believe the country has got to have a change of administration. and I'm for it. But I will not necessarily vote for everything he's for any more than I think any other Republican with half a brain would, because that's not the way this government's set up. We have a two-party system, and within each party you have a relative spectrum of ideology, but there are certain distinguishing characteristics, and perhaps the best characterized by the word liberal and progressive, not that they are tautologically characterized that way, but that by historic tradition, Teddy Roosevelt was a progressive. FDR Sr. was a liberal. Now, the difference is that the Democrats believe in doing everything through government that it's possible to do through government. And we believe that we ought to do everything through private enterprise that it is possible to do through private enterprise. By the way, the author of that proposition was Abraham Lincoln. Now, I have worked that way. There's nobody in the Congress that's been more indefatigable in terms of getting the private enterprise system to discharge social responsibilities in employment, in training, job training, in financing, you know, the reform of the railroads, or the deregulation of trucking, or of airlines. I'm one of the authors, for example, of the bill right now for regulatory reform, which will take away a great deal of the vexatious powers of the commissions, boards and commissioners. And that comes out of the Governmental Affairs Committee, where I'm one of the very senior members. So I would consider, frankly, an administration now with Reagan at the head of it as a great opportunity, because I think that's what the country has to turn to in order really to cut this budget and bureaucracy. You got to get rid of functions, but you can't get rid of functions at the expense of, you know, the lame, the halt, the blind, the young, and the old. You got to find a place to put them if they're legitimate functions.
In foreign affairs, I notice your policy statement here does not mention China, which has been the biggest foreign affairs story of the past.
Statement does not mention China.
I don't see China mentioned in here.
At
any rate,
no. What is the policy statement you're looking at?
Well, it's a series of statements on various things: the Polish workers' strike, Jerusalem inflation.
There's also something dated August 22.
Okay.
Though, and says
well, I wanted to ask you about China in view of that.
I'm interested. I like to detect problems in my office while I'm here.
But let me ask you about China.
You know,
because of your
What is this, Jennifer? What?
I didn't put it together. Kay did, but apparently it says that it was from the last week, and that was dated August 22.
Oh, it's you that did this.
Well,
okay.
Because of your...
You can understand that. Why would it contain China? It's nothing I did on China.
All right. Because of your interest in foreign affairs, I wonder if you can assess what impact this apparent waffling the Republican nominee has had on our commitment to...
I don't think there's going to be any great impact of Governor Reagan's seeming lack of understanding of the Taiwan Relations Act. And I think that, you know, our friends and allies and other people abroad don't expect the height of sophistication in foreign policy in Governor Reagan quite yet. And he had the good sense, and I think that's a great credit to him, to back away from any effort to lay down the law on Taiwan. I'm one of the two authors of the Taiwan Relations Act, and it is, an admirable solution to the dilemma, which, as Bush indicated, Reagan ought to let severely alone. Is now doing. So, considering the fact that when Carter came to this job, he hadn't even had the training of public campaigning that Reagan has had for so many years, I'm hopeful that this is an early in the game gaffe.
You don't think that the act has been damaged seriously by this?
I don't. I don't agree with Woodcock. If the matter had been persisted in, I know the Chinese, I know the Chinese expert, but I've been there, and they've been here. You know, I know Wang Hua very well. He was an ambassador to the UN. And I don't think they have any false impressions. They might take a little fun and rubbing it in, but it's going to have no permanent effect. But if persisted in, then it could have had a serious effect.
Senator, in a prior visit here, you discussed at some length your interest in rejuvenating the U.S. manufacturing process, the industrial machine as a whole.
What have I done?
What have you specifically done? What would you specifically like to work on to help speed that along?
Very good. In 1977, and in 8, 9, and 80, I have been the chairman of the Republican Task Force on the Economy. And we offered the tax program in 77. I welcome you to look at your clips and look at your release, which is now the one dealt with by the Finance Committee, to wit, accelerated depreciation and other benefits for reindustrialization, including research and development, which is very essential. Now, I believe that the tax package is too heavily weighted in non-reindustrialization tax breaks. And I would like to see it 50-50 rather than one-third, two-thirds, because the only real justification for the tax cut now is to target it to the modernization of American business. And I will work toward that end. And I believe that that adjustment is necessary, and that the only justification for an individual tax cut, which we could easily forego, by the way, but we won't, because politically you couldn't pass the other without this one, and it's very critical to pass the other, is a tax cut to deal with the increase in Social Security tax, which takes place in 81, and a tax cut to adjust what's called bracket creep. That is the fact that as you get more dollars, you pay more taxes, even though you haven't improved your standard of living. But as I say, the pragmatics of politics will require a personal tax cut. So while I was against, and while I was here, I'm sure I said so, against Roth Kemp, which cuts 30% in 3 years, I am for the 10% idea, plus the targeted tax cut for business. So that's point one. I'm for that. I'm for it now. And we will be presenting those alternatives to the tax bill if it's not, if it's not adequately included, which it may not be.
You would take an active part in it.
I would take an active part.
As opposed to simply being for it, you would help.
Oh, yes, of course. Well, I did it before. You see, Danforth and I did this very thing in 78, but we were defeated. We proposed practically all of these measures that we had authored in the task force of which Danforth was a member and I was the chairman in 78, but we got licked. The Democrats voted solidly against us. We felt that was the prescription then. Secondly, we have laws on the books now, and we have other laws which are passed one house of the dealing with the organization of labor management committees. I'm positive that I spoke about that when I was here, which I believe are essential to deal with matters outside of collective bargaining. That is absenteeism. You know, when your car started Monday or Tuesday. Morale, worker morale, drug addiction, and other qualities of working life. Now, we now have considerable experience with that because we have such committees functioning in Jamestown, Elmira, and Buffalo, and extremely successfully. In the first place, Jamestown, they've remade completely the labor climate. So much so that, with my help, they attracted a new industry, which put 2,500 workers in a relatively small city. I want that, you know, I want to go ahead with that and broaden and extend that.
Excuse me, would you consider that kind of a pilot project for this?
Those three are, with the first one, Jamestown, was said as a pilot. And it ought to spread throughout our state. It's one of the things that we can do to make the New York labor climate an attractive reason for coming to New York. And it's one of the very positive and affirmative things we can do, and it's now been proven. Thirdly, I would like to amend the antitrust laws of the United States to modernize them. They're very much out of date, both domestically in terms of the criterion, which is reasonable competition, to a criterion of the public interest, which is broader than that, and will take account of technologies, will take account of the impact of imports, which we're going to have to accept more and more because we're going to have to export more and more in order to pay these raw material bills, including oil. So any way you can do it, except, you know, as we rid ourselves of oil dependency by conservation, which to my mind is number one, and synthetics and other means of power production, including nuclear, by the way. I do not agree with rejecting the nuclear option. While you strive to make it safe, you cannot discard it. It's too important economically.
On that point, if I may, Senator.
Let me complete,
okay.
Then
okay.
I'll come back. And the third point would be to find areas in which business can take over governmental functions. Notably, for me, the training and education of new workers, and also the training and education of the unemployed. I handled all the unemployment bills on the floor for a long time. I was the senior member of the Labor Committee. That's a $20 billion price tag per bill. And it broke my heart to see that because of lack of facilities, those guys just drew their checks and were bored to death and never tried to upgrade their skills, or if they didn't have a high school diploma, to get one. So that's the kind of thing I have in mind.
You said you do not agree with discarding entirely the nuclear alternative.
Right.
New York State has stayed development of further nuclear power facilities, which has an impact on a number of industries in the state, including General Electric here in Schenectady. Assuming that the state position remains the same, what do you see what do you feel the federal government should do about either overriding the state authority or providing alternatives for the industries that are impacted in the state?
Well, I don't see the providing of alternatives except by financing, which we're beginning to do now, the conversion to coal in order to save fuel. You know, we've actually undertaken those conversions, and a good part of the money is coming from the government. And they're specifically named plants. We have, that is, power plants. We have passed such a bill in the Senate, where I joined it. As to the preemption, I believe the federal government has to be able to offer not only reasonable safety, which it's coming close to now, but it also has to offer waste facilities. Is a big issue for New York, where we have a very grave danger with respect to waste facilities. And when it is able to do that, then I believe it will be time to consider and discuss preemption. But that's what I think, because the nuclear power source is a national problem. It's not a state problem.
Senator, how fearful are you that your support amongst Republican voters may be soft and less likely to turn out in the polls on September 9th and know it's very ideologically committed supporters of Alan Mono?
I have very grave concern about any election, including the primary, but I am hopeful, and I believe in justice. In the first place, the polls bear me out, or whatever they mean. But I'm hopeful that, having lived with me so long, having found me successful, let's make it primitive, not too intellectual, that Republicans are so anxious to see Governor Reagan carry New York that I rather think in this season they'd rather go with me than with an untried product. That's an elementary reason. And there are a great many Republicans, as I think you all know, who respect my ability, and my character, and my integrity, and my inventiveness in terms of finding legislative formula, and find it beneficial to have the benefit of such influence as I have been able to build up in all these years.
What do your internal polls show about the willingness of a Javits Republican to go to the polls as compared to a D'Amato Republican to go to the polls?
We're getting a very good result. We have a telephone campaign going, which looks very good. But I never predict election, I want you to know. I want to make that clear at once. Not including my own. Including my own. I never predict election. And I've never made a speech in which I've said when. I've always said if. And I hope I never allow myself to make any other kind of speech.
Senator, one of the extraordinary complications of this particular campaign, as distinguished from the ones that you ran before, is that both your age and the state of your health have become matters of public discussion and dispute. What do you say to those people that you have served in the Senate honorably and well, your country honorably and well for all these years, but now, given your age, given the state of your health, it's time for a change?
I say the following, that if that is their only criterion, I can't control that. That is my time for change, which you last said. But if their criterion is to get me at the peak of my form, when it comes to what it takes to be a senator, I'm at the peak of my form. I have all the seniority. I have all the experience. My brain seems to be functioning very well. I have all the zest for the job, and I have, in my life, turned my back on the first real opportunity I had to go to theater and concerts and travel and play with my children, though they're all, you know, big people. As often as I should like, because I just couldn't resist the need today for what I've got to give our people, and I know how serious the issues are.
Senator,
very few people know it as well as I do.
Mr. D'Amato's commercial.
So I've made that option. I've exercised my option. Now it's up to the people.
Mr. D'Amato's television commercials have been hammering, as you undoubtedly know, very hard at that point, quite bluntly. I'm wondering if your campaign has assessed it, if you have any information whether those whether those commercials have hurt your position, or indeed whether they may have backfired.
Our polls indicate backfire. And
to what extent, do you know, sir?
Oh, I can't tell you. And they have been crude and a little vulgar that I think it's involved a public resentment. I'm too long in this business to be resentful or to be insulted, except that I hope that the people will feel that they don't want that kind of a senator. That this is not New York, and that therefore they'll repudiate it, these tactics, which are pretty low. I've never encountered them in all the years I've been running. Never have. You know, these funny pictures showing me dying, or, you know, this terrible tastelessness in saying, you know, look at the guy, you think he can last 6 years. I don't think I rate that even from Mr. D'Amato.
Yeah. Does that personally affect you?
How anxious he's to get the job.
Does that anger you?
No, no, it doesn't anger me. I'll just give him hell when I see him.
Did you ever meet D'Amato?
Yes, I've met him.
And? I mean, in the context of this campaign or before?
No, I've met him. There was a certain amount of preliminary to the state committee meeting, and he went to a lot of meetings, and I ran into these meetings, and I heard him speak. That's all. I don't know the man. It's funny, but I've never met him before. I didn't even know he existed before.
Isn't that unusual, considering the size of the area?
It is. It is unusual. But nonetheless, I hadn't come across.
But isn't that at least a part illuminating in light of what he does say about you, that your interests have been focused more on the national problems than they have been on the state problems?
I don't think that's true, because where do I do my work? And where does Mr. D'Amato do his work? And to that wonderful reporter from Hoosick Falls, who says, I haven't seen you around here lately. Frankly, I have been hanging around the corner at Hoosick Falls, waiting for him to see me around the corner. And why have I amassed such a record? Why do I do so much? You know, because I'm traveling my state and going to every bar mitzvah and bris? No. But because I'm down there working until very late at night and getting up early in the morning and doing the job the people sent me there to do. It's the way it's done. It's not done with mirrors. I'm not that brilliant.
Would you consider Mr. D'Amato less qualified to be senator than any of your Democratic challengers?
No, I don't wish to pass on that. That would be something which I don't wish to do, and I'll tell you why. I have been very careful not to get into that Democratic. And once I start that, that's endless. So I'll wait until, if I'm nominated, which I hope I will be, I'll wait until the Democrats pick their champion and I'll take them on.
Mr.